it's our job to just learn as much as we can about other people, other places,
mm-hmm.
be informed by that, to understand other cultures, because everyone has something to offer and there's no one right answer to anything.
On the House is a series of casual interviews with Philippine real estate leaders about the stories behind their personas. Lemudi's very own CEO, Bhavna Suresh, hosts the dialogues over a drink or two. Today's guest is Marco Antonio, President and CEO of Century Properties Group. Marco shares how our devices have made the world more connected and have eventually changed perspectives, emphasizing that it is important to learn about other people and culture in today's day and age.
Hi, Marco. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
My pleasure to be with Lemudi.
We generally start this conversation with one question.
Sure.
And our one question is the single most question you are sick and tired of talking about.
Okay. The question I'm most asked about frequently, but I'm not tired of answering, is how I'm really approaching my new role and responsibility as president and CEO of Century Properties Group.
Oh, wow. But is that something that you've been asked in the last 1 year?
Or? Well, like I was officially given the role June of this year. And of course, you know, the position I take very seriously. It's a fiduciary role for all the shareholders. So I'm excited about the role.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be the best steward of the company I can be. You know, I take it as a huge challenge, but also I want to embrace the challenge and the opportunity. And build on what the company has achieved the past 3 decades. Really anchored on our culture of passion, I would say innovation and excellence.
Mm-hmm.
We want to develop next generation real estate, which in my view translates to a better company for our shareholders and a better product for our consumers.
You knew that you had big shoes, you have big shoes mm-hmm. to fill. And you have, how does one prepare for something like this? How do you know that it's coming?
Sure.
And you know, there's so much to kind of embrace and...
Well, to be honest, I didn't really know until recently that I was coming.
Okay.
You know, I've spent 22 years in the company.
Uh-huh.
It's not my first job out of college, but it is my second job out of college. And I've never been with any other company since joining the firm,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of a 2-year SIF hiatus for my MBA.
Mm-hmm.
So through those 22 years, or over 22 years, sort of rose the rank and learning the ropes of real estate, initially as a project director,
mm-hmm.
Then as sort of co-chief operating officer, and
mm-hmm.
then most recently president and CEO. And, you know, to answer your question, how do you prepare for this role? I think you try to absorb as much over the years. You have successes, you have failures, you have a lot of learnings, and collectively through years of, I would say, exposure,
yeah.
you really get the hang of things.
But you wear a different cap. I mean, you did 22 years, so you understand the system in
mm-hmm.
and out.
Sure.
You look at it from, you know,
sure.
this is what I would do better.
Sure.
Or you come with that knowledge.
Of course.
But do you feel like while you were doing the 22 years, because you were from the family, there was a different kind of learning or different kind of experience?
So I guess I have several roles when it comes to the company. One is... as a professional manager,
yeah,
to would also be the shareholder of the company,
mm-hmm.
having initially been a private enterprise for many, many years and public only less
mm-hmm.
than the past decade, and also as an employee of the company. And so I viewed the company from different angles,
yeah.
you would say, but I think bottom line, I cared a lot about the company.
Mm-hmm.
To ensure that, you know, we didn't just focus on short term,
mm-hmm.
but really trying to build value over time, because, you know, the company that you build, the brand that you build is really what you can parlay into future successes. And it also is a testament to, you know, how you've made the customers happy. And if you do that, you know, you're hoping for repeat business and, of course, to enlarge the company over time.
Because you spoke about time frame, and because we've been talking about this a little earlier as well, how do you define short term and long term in a time like today?
It's a good question. You know, as we were talking about earlier, you know, you have to have your vision set,
yeah.
strategies around that vision, and of course, implementation of such business plans to support the strategies. Real estate has longer gestation project gestation periods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just, like in maybe other industries wherein you decide something and you could quick to market or quick to shift gears.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start construction, you're committed to building this building, which usually takes several years.
Yeah.
So from the point of view of project gestation, I would say, you know, these range anywhere from 3 to 5 years, depending on a project or
mm-hmm.
a tower or a master plan. With that said, you have to focus on short term, which would be 1 year or less, in ensuring that the milestones that you set, the KPIs, KRAs that you set for 1 year are achieved to give you really the chances of success over the medium and long term.
Do you feel like the teams are catching up to speed with this new energy, I want to say?
More and more of the workforce right now is comprised of younger people, millennials today, and of course, you know, Gen Z,
mm-hmm.
Fast up and coming, sort of joining the workforce. But with that said, I think Century is a combination of tried and tested hands. Like, I think the dynamism of a young workforce and new blood is the perfect complement to the sort of like the wisdom that the sort of the older and more experienced managers bring to the table. With that said, I think we're trying to really promote a culture of meritocracy,
mm-hmm.
wherein it's not all about the number of years that
mm-hmm.
you are in the company, but what you can really contribute to the company. So we try to reward.
And how do you measure that? I mean, when you're trying to get new workforce in?
So we actually have quite a set sort of quantitative formula,
mm-hmm.
But we also try to apply qualitative qualitative criteria,
mm-hmm.
Because it's not only on the what you do, but also how you do. So we try to take a combination of both.
Because you spoke about mistakes a little bit, and you kind of beautifully turned that around into
sure.
joining it with wisdom and getting that into the workflow of how things work today. What is your approach on mistakes?
Sure. Well,
personally,
I think,
more than work, I think.
Personally.
Sure.
Learning experience.
Yeah.
I think what is life if not sort of a journey with ups and downs?
Uh-huh.
And to expect life to be without mistakes, I think it's a very jaded and ignorant sort of perspective.
Yeah.
But if you can expect that you are going to have mistakes, and what we always hear is that the biggest successes come from maybe some of the larger failures or the larger challenges, which brings out the best in all of us. How you bounce back, how resilient you are, whether professional or personal life, I think will spell the difference in the long term.
So as a new leader in this system, how have you defined the ability for your team members, or people who are following you, to make mistakes?
Hmm.
How do you ensure that they know, hey, you know, it's okay to make a mistake, because unless you make a mistake, there's no moving forward?
So how we approach risk is also how we approach mistakes is how we approach risks.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go into a business, you try as much as possible to discuss what your risk exposures are.
Mm-hmm.
How do you mitigate that sort of as a baseline? So if you're coming to it with an expectation of risk in the project, which you can't totally eliminate, to the extent that you can actually mitigate the risk, then you're already ahead of the curve.
Okay.
Now, if people still make mistakes, there are unavoidable
yeah.
mistakes sometimes, maybe mistakes beyond your control, and I don't know if you consider that a mistake,
mm-hmm.
or the atmosphere that you operate on, or there are mistakes. And if it's a blatant mistake and that you really overlook, maybe you can give a person a chance,
mm-hmm.
a second chance, but you, of course, won't accept this when it's a recurring issue.
Okay.
Then you have to make that clear, because if you don't properly pointed out, it now could fester into a bad example for others.
And is that your approach to mistakes as a father of two?
Okay.
Or is that a very different, like,
it's
risk?
Harder,
and
it's harder to parent than it is to lead a company. No.
Really?
No. I think it comes with its own challenges. You know, I have young children. I have a 7 and a 5-year-old.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, and, you know, with any firstborn, everything is new. But when the secondborn, you're more chill. So you actually learn what would have been like a big mistake with the first one, it's maybe, or a risk, it's, you know, with the second one, you're a little bit more relaxed with everything. I try not to be a type A parent because I enjoyed my childhood. I want my kids to enjoy their childhood.
Okay. And how does that kind of fester into mistakes, because we've not spoken about mistakes yet.
Well, you call their attention. Like, I try to do parenting through conversation, really.
Okay.
Maybe the previous generations did things differently.
Okay.
Maybe there were more disciplinarians.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's actually a good thing, because in this day and age, when they make mistakes, time out, of course.
Okay.
You give them a timeout. You give them sort of, try to be clear beforehand what the rules are, what sort of incentives that you give, rewards, but also punishments if they do certain things. And the key there is to actually be clear from the beginning, not when it's actually happening, because they're in the red zone.
Okay.
And they won't accept anything at that point.
Okay. And this has changed? The style has changed from the first kid to the second, you say?
No, or? We're trying to be consistent with that.
Oh, wow.
But how I react to mistakes is maybe the way...
You have changed.
Yeah, I have changed, yes.
It's no more knee-jerk. Oh my God,
no,
everything is going to...
Not everything is a crisis, and not everything is like a must-do today. You can actually think about it and, you know, ponder, and then your next move.
5 minutes in.
5 minutes is...
Everything has calmed down.
Yes, I think, you know, you breathe, you take a breather, and you relax, the kid relax, and everything starts, you know, you can see things less emotionally and more objectively.
And has that kind of carried on to work in a way? Do you feel like being a father at some level has helped you?
Most definitely. I think when faced with decisions,
mm-hmm,
that are complex in nature, or with having to, or faced with a challenge, I try to first center myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. And try to, I guess, distill the situation and trying to make a simple decision. But I think if you're guided,
yeah,
by this, by a purpose and by an objective, then at least you can start to break down an issue and what's more important and what's less important.
Because we've spoken so much about real estate, I'm going to try stepping away from it a little bit. Also, you've spent 22 years in real estate.
Mm.
Have you ever thought of what you would do if not real estate?
So, you know, growing up with my father being around it, and him even bringing us to, let's say, open houses,
mm-hmm,
during weekends,
mm-hmm,
he was so busy,
mm-hmm,
because he started this company, and, you know, from nothing. And so whenever he had the opportunity to spend time with us, you know, he would do so. He would even bring us to open houses, and so I guess through all those years, it's kind of been part of my blood. So to answer your question, have I thought about other industries? I do think about it, but still in the context of the business, because real estate right now is sort of cross-pollinating with other industries, whether it be, or enterprises, be it technology, etc. I always try to go back and see how my interest in other fields could potentially, you know, be imported into our business and how it can make things better. To be honest, I really haven't thought about a company outside of Century Properties.
So no funky, like, nomad, a traveler with, like, no responsibilities.
I have had personal investments in,
sure,
other industries.
Sure.
But in terms of being a nomad, I don't know how long I can be a nomad for.
Okay.
But I think what, you know, my passions do lie in travel. Travel always is inspiring.
What kind of travel?
It's more personal and professional travel. But I'm always, whenever I do travel, you know, outside of work, even if it's for a personal trip, I try to squeeze in sort of visiting, you know, not only a landmark or a new project in a city,
uh-huh,
because it is my interest, not necessarily because it's my job.
Sure.
So I think I'm lucky in the sense that my job is also my personal passion.
Sure.
And so whether or not it's, you know, seeing cities that are older or that are newer, you can always take some learnings from that. And it's always enjoyable.
Do you feel like your children enjoy the whole travel bug as well? And
I think so.
Okay.
Who doesn't? I think they, luckily, at an early age, they're blessed to see many places.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope they have the gratitude to their parents for bringing them there.
But do you feel personally, as a parent, travel does change perspectives. It opens us up as individuals.
Yeah. Well, first, I think growing up today is very different generationally.
Okay.
You're now connected to more of the world through your phone or through the internet, which I didn't really have growing up. But in this day and age, that you can travel through your phone.
Mm-hmm.
But travel, whether or not it's physical travel, reading, reading about through sort of print or even digital, it, you know, sort of exposes you, removes any, you know, just one way of thinking, because we're all born into different cities, born into different religions. There's no right or wrong. There's just different. And, you know, we can talk about this a lot more, but ultimately, like, I think it's our job to just learn as much as we can about other people, other places, be informed by that to understand other cultures, because everyone has something to offer and there's no one right answer to anything.
Because you spoke about technology. Technology sounds like a double-edged sword. I mean, it is giving us access to everything, but it could also be like an individual wearing blinders, being exposed to the same things again and again. And it is making the world very biased in a lot of ways. So yes, it becomes an individual choice whether to become an open, accepting human being with, you know, who's unapologetic about their view, but also accepting of others. How do you feel as a parent or as a human being today that you would help kind of curb that?
There's something to be said about delayed gratification and being rewarded with something as opposed to if having access to it all the time. You know, as a simple example of your sort of iPad. Like, I think growing up with technology is an asset. If like anything, if you use it wisely and constructively, it's a good thing. But if you abuse it or it abuses you, it's a bad thing. So I think, you know, for our children, we try to, you know, they have exposure to technology through school. But at home, we try to limit their use of it, you know, at a very early age. You know, what's technology to them? It's you know, forms of entertainment, really. But it's also now a tool of learning. So, you know, they have workbooks online, so that's okay. And when it comes to sort of technology for entertainment, you try to curb that to sort of manageable levels, so that they don't feel that they get withdrawals whenever you have to pull it away.
Yeah, and how does that seep into work? I mean, technology has entered our generation, and work has changed a little bit. How do you feel like you're?
Yeah.
Kind of controlling that piece and putting it all together.
Technology is a way, it's a two-way street, right? At the end of the day, technology will probably, you know, provide a level playing field for others. So it's up to the company to still build the best product physically and provide the best service, touch point, customer satisfaction, which are really over and above technology. So ultimately, what product do you still give your customer, and what experience did they have through the customer journey, and ultimately as users, whether or not they're residential, sort of our residents in our residential projects, or tenants in our office or our malls.
So you do feel technology has seeped in really deep, even in the real estate spectrum, which is considered a larger, older, slower moving sector.
Maybe at different paces.
Okay.
But I think over the years and so much more, it's going to continue to permeate our industry. The industry itself will take some time. Other countries will move faster. Other countries may move slower. But ultimately, beyond technology, there will still be the ultimate product, which is the final real estate that you can sort of hold,
touch, feel,
enjoy, and then let's not forget the whole customer experience, which is the service that we provide as a company to our customers.
How do you describe a dream home? Like, what is that one element of a dream home that kind of brings everything together for you?
People have different budgets.
Sure.
Ultimately, what everybody looks for, I mean, it's really overused, but like, they're looking for a lot of value, and they're looking to purchase a home that they can really grow into, enjoy, that they can ultimately pass on to maybe their children. You know, in probably all cultures, real estate is probably the largest investment that one family could have. And so we take this very, very seriously of trying to provide a home that they could really enjoy for the long term. So that includes the specifications, the best specifications for a certain budget.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to provide a lot of amenities and services outside the four walls of their unit.
Mm-hmm.
Trying, of course, to provide, you know, get the best locations that we can. Mm-hmm. And ultimately packaging this into something that our buyers can be happy and that they can grow older into.
And you don't feel differently about the younger buyers coming in today? You feel like the younger buyers also are thinking about passing it on to the next generation? Or has that...
I think people have different objectives, whether it's their first home purchase or whether they're ultimately purchasing it for an established and grown family.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like anything, everybody wants, while they're going to use it, they still want to make a smart investment.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it is a financial asset that is sort in many ways a big chunk of your personal wealth portfolio. So whether or not it's your first home or your second home or your nth home, you're still looking for that store of value, that whether or not you keep or you trade, that the value will be retained and hopefully grow over time.
Mm-hmm.
So
the young 30-year-olds seem a little less sentimental these days, so it's just a question whether you see them.
I think while they approach or they view the world from a different lens,
mm-hmm.
I think we're all humans, we're all Filipinos, we're all, I think, love property, love mm-hmm. the freedom that property gives us,
mm-hmm.
love the freedom that personal space
mm-hmm.
offers us.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't change. And
mm-hmm.
even if you talk to millennials, and we've surveyed
mm-hmm.
quite a few, they still want that personal space.
Mm-hmm.
For themselves, and you know, to have that freedom to sort of graduate from living at home and having that
thing to call their own and that place to come back to.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So their own home, that sort of that rationale still holds true, I think, for the younger generations.
And do you feel like design is changing? I know it is. Every couple of years it changes a little bit, but are you seeing a dramatic difference in anything? Are the kitchens actually shrinking? Because who cooks anymore, right?
For the Philippines,
sure.
Which is very sensitive to buyers, of course, affordability.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's there has been changes that have caused, let's say, generally real estate to get smaller and smaller. So your people are very mindful of how much they can spend on a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So developers such as ourselves are very cognizant of such. So try to find a sweet spot where we can deliver the most value
mm-hmm.
for their affordability.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in general, I think even in Asia, you know, you look at first world countries like Japan or Singapore, where prices have gone up. In Japan, Hong Kong, units
mm-hmm.
have gotten smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And this has also sort of happened in the Philippines. But of course, there will always be the niche, super luxury, ultra luxury, where it's the reverse. You know,
yeah.
The more space, the better.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Because we've spoken so much about real estate, your children, you and the way you view the world.
Mm.
We'd love for this conversation to maybe culminate with you or understanding how you describe yourself in one word. What would you describe yourself as in just one word?
Happy.
Happy?
Yeah.
Do you feel like the world outside of your family would describe you similarly?
I think so.
I think
happiness is sort of a big goal. And
yeah.
I try to be happy. And I think try to be, you know, you can't be so serious about everything. And
mm-hmm.
happiness isn't one-dimensional. You know, professional success is only one aspect. It's sort of how you roll with life
mm-hmm.
and how you impact the people around you,
mm-hmm.
how you hopefully, as a developer, professional sense, how, you know, how we provide a positive impact to the people who work for us, our stakeholders, but it's in also the communities that we operate under. So I try to be as positive
mm-hmm.
as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe positive is a more appropriate word than happy. Happiness is the goal.
Okay.
But I'm quite a positive person.
Wow. On that really happy and positive note, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.